Tonight marks a milestone that will augur well for the future of Jewish education for women in the greater metropolitan New York area. And we are pleased that so many of you have come to mark and share this evening with us. I'm pleased to note that tonight, at the first board meeting held on these premises of the Yeshiva University High School, Dr. Lamb, president of Yeshiva University, inducted 8 new members into the service of this important board within the Yeshiva University family that so many of you have come to mark and share this evening with us. I'm pleased to note that tonight, at the first board meeting held on these premises of the Yeshiva University High School, Dr. Lamb, president of Yeshiva University, inducted 8 new members into the service of this important board within the Yeshiva University family, and that all of them are residents of this Queens community, most of them having played a very important role in the earlier development of the Samuel H. Wang Yeshiva University High School for Girls. We take pride in advising you that David Fiskus, Harry Friedman, Fred Hurwitz, Leon A. Miller, Joseph Rubin, Arno Schalmach, Bernard Weiss, and Gloria Wang are now duly elected members of the board, and we know that their outstanding leadership will play a vital and dynamic role in charting the future of our educational planning. Most important is the fact that we wish to invite the active leadership and participation of all of you who have come here to be with us tonight. In the immediate future, we will be implementing a Samuel H. Wang Yeshiva University High School Leadership Council, which will seek to involve the thinking, participation, and financial support of those many men and women who have made the educational program in this school possible until this time, and who will hopefully continue to add strength and vigor to the new enlarged effort which we are together undertaking and officially marking on this occasion. We are delighted to have with us Mrs. Gloria Wang, who, as you may know, has been elected as the honorary chairman of the Yeshiva University High School Board in recognition of the outstanding leadership which she has given to this school and continuing the legacy of love for Jewish education, which was so beautifully and generously expressed by her late husband, Samuel H. Wang, throughout their lifetime together. We are also pleased that Mr. Leon Miller, recently elected treasurer of the Yeshiva University High School Board, is with us, and it is my pleasure to call upon him to introduce our very special guest speaker for this evening. Leon.
Thank you, Irwin. One of the most wondrous and immediate greatness of the Jewish people was the great melding of 200,000 dedicated protesters, letting the Russian leaders know we firmly stand together to demand Jewish rights and freedom for our Russian brothers and sisters. Here at the Wang High School, we have had the chance to educate many of these Russian girl immigrants for their future lives as devoted Jewish women. This is a great remuneration to the overall efforts of our past by all the officers and board who established this magnificent yeshiva. And I'm sure in that vein, we'll go to greater heights of achievement in the future of the Samuel H. Wang Yeshiva University High School for Girls. I'm assured of this continued devotion to Jewish life and education because of a man whom I have long admired as an academician and as an administrator. He is a dynamic leader, a respected philosopher, author, teacher, scientist, and a revered rabbi and educator. He has served as the president of the Yeshiva University for 11 years, and under his direction and guidance, the university has grown and flourished in a way that makes all of us who are privileged to work together with him genuinely proud of his achievements. It is a very special honor for me to present to you one of the most articulate spokesmen of our people, the distinguished and esteemed president of Yeshiva University, Dr. Norman Lamb.
Thank you very much, Leon. Where is he? For your wonderful introduction, for your charming exaggeration, and also for chairing last week's Yeshiva University Queen's Heritage Award dinner, which was a great success as a result of your superb leadership. I was deeply gratified, and all of Yeshiva University felt deeply gratified, by the Queen's community paying tribute to Mrs. Esther Eisenberg, who has done so much to advance Jewish education in Queens. I've always thought that this lady deserves that award, particularly because she gives special meaning to the word heritage. Normally we refer to a heritage as that which we receive. For her, it means even more that which she has given. I know not only her children, her daughter-in-law, but also her grandchildren who are students at Yeshiva, and it's certainly a heritage that she has bequeathed to the future. My friends, I'm still under the impress of a month, the month of November, that I spent in Israel, in Jerusalem, as the first of three mini sabbatical months that I will be devoting to my own research. A month in Israel where the weather was delightful, where the kedusha, the holiness, is palpable, and where the polarization is ubiquitous, constant, all about you, without surcease. Example, the Haredim, the extreme, the ultra-Orthodox, have demonstrations, which is perfectly legitimate in a democratic society, but there's a lunatic fringe that throws stones. The lunatic fringe, it so happens, is mostly, I suspect, teenagers who have an excess of adrenaline and other such hormones and have no other way of expressing it. I suspect also it is their version of a rock band. While at the same time, venerable liberal members of Knesset have nothing better to do than to propose a law requiring the yeshivas to fly the flag. Can you imagine if that happened in America? A member of Congress would be laughed out of the House, either House, for such an inane proposal. You have some kind of, I don't know how to describe, a psychopath who prints a leaflet excoriating an archaeologist, distinguished archaeologist who recently passed away at a very young age, on the basis of the fact that the archaeologist disturbed the graves of some ancient graves. And he did this, this printed leaflet was an abomination, to say the least. At the same time that the Reform Group has nothing better to do than to demonstrate in favor of keeping movies open on Friday night. When my question to them was, you should all demonstrate, well, before I tell you what my question was, let me remind you, tell you something. When I was a youngster, I once asked my grandfather, a blessed memory, who was a great rabbi, a great posek, I said to him, grandfather, Zaida, are you allowed to drink Pepsi-Cola on Pesach? He says, Pesach, yes, a whole year, no. Friday night movies is a secondary question. The primary question, I said, is all that pornography, all that junk, the worst, the cheapest, the most vulgar imports from America, that you're satisfied to feed into your children's minds all during the week? Isn't that a more important cultural question? But such things go by the side in an atmosphere of polarization when everyone is getting into the scene, everyone is getting into the act. And yet you are aware of this. Everyone is aware of polarization. So let me say two things. Number one, that there's been too much generalization and too much exaggeration. Not all people who have black hats are Hasidim. You know, now in America, anyone who is somewhat observant is one of the Hasidim. And this seems to be the word that is used so inappropriately for anyone who is observant. Not all Haredim, not all of the ultra-Orthodox are violent or polarized. They are living their lives according to their insights, and they have the perfect right and even responsibility to do so. Many of them, I dare say most of them, are the most pleasant people. My wife and I spent last Shabbat, the week before this Shabbat, in Meir Sharm, or Geula more accurately, we were at the Bismedrish of the Bayana Rebbe. We came in, no one recognized us. I was there with a relative. We were not immediately recognizable to this group. And there wasn't a single youngster, a single old man who didn't come over to me or the women to my wife with a warm, happy, friendly greeting of Shalom Aleichem and Good Shabbos and welcome. These are not the picture you get if you read the papers. You'd imagine that as soon as you walk in without the regalia that is indigenous to the denizens of that area, they would stone you. It's not so. There's been a great deal of exaggeration and a great deal of generalization. Yes, when we walked out of shul, and this is an intensely Orthodox area, whenever a car would drive by, people would shout, Shabbos, Shabbos. So what? I must tell you, after a while, I too began to shout Shabbos. That's not dangerous. That's an expression of opinion to which they are perfectly and legitimately entitled. So number one is the generalization, and it's far exaggerated. Number two, please believe me, it is not the greatest problem that we Jews have today. Despite the fact that it's an unhappy phenomenon, that it's a serious phenomenon, it is not our greatest problem. It takes third place in Israel to two other problems. The first is security. I was there during the hang glider attack on the army base. That is far more troublesome. It's far more troublesome when you realize, even without the attacks, the number of young men whose lives are lost or are maimed for life because of maneuvers or because of accidents that occur inevitably in the military. You speak to parents of lost children, and you begin to realize that a few rocks or a few demonstrations are not the end of the world. There are far more serious matters. And number two, a greater problem than polarization, ignorance. An abysmal ignorance of the Jewish tradition. Maybe Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah, maybe Torah will come from Zion, but so far it's going to come from a very small part of that population. Ignorance amaratzis of the Jewish tradition, the Jewish past, the Jewish culture, the Jewish destiny is still very much a palpable fact of life. And of course, these problems are not confined to Israel. If polarization is bad here, it is worse there. The reverse is true of ignorance. It is bad there, it is worse here. I must share with you something that someone told me while I was there. There was a mission that came from America. You know, I don't know any more American Jews who simply travel to Israel. They go either on missions or on pilgrimages. No one really takes a trip to Israel just for going to Israel. Well, there was a mission of American Jews to a very select leadership group, if I'm not mistaken, it was either the WZO or the Jewish Agency. And this is reported to me by one of the people who attended in a very bemused way. And he says to me, it's remarkable, at the middle of the meeting or towards the end of the meeting, there was one man who had to say Kaddish. So he asked if they would come to the side and have a minyan. When they did, another American Jew looked at them in consternation. He was astounded. He said, "What are they doing?" So someone said, "They're praying." He said, "Not in the temple? Are they going into business for themselves?" He was shocked. He thought the only place you're allowed to pray is in a temple, that otherwise you're kind of encroaching on someone else's rights, as if God doesn't know how to hear the prayers of people who are not in temples. This is the level of Jewish ignorance with which we have to deal in leadership. So you can appreciate that polarization is a serious problem, but not the worst. We have worse problems that we must deal with. And so I returned from Israel from a delightful month with a renewed dedication to two principles that guide Yeshiva University and together spell a great part of our mission. And that is education, great education, comprehensive education, and number two, moderation. A moderation that comes not from compromise, but out of principle. The commitment to live a sane Jewish life. And sanity includes Torah, it includes the Rabbanu Shel Olam, it includes the people of Israel, and it includes a certain openness and a certain tolerance and a certain awareness and sensitivity. The two principles of education and moderation are, to my mind, expressed in Limud HaTorah, the study of and teaching of Torah, and in Kvod HaTorah, the honor that we must give to Torah by acting in a manner that will redound to the credit and glory of Torah. On the great words that all of us recite at least twice a day in the Shema, V'yahavta es Hashem Elokecha, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul, the Sifri says, Sheyehei Shem Shamayim Misahev Al Yodecha. You must conduct yourself so that V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha, others will love God because of you. Your life must be so exemplary, so distinguished, so honorable, that those who do not know God and do not know Torah will be attracted to it. This is what I mean by moderation. At this historic occasion, my friends, when we inaugurate, as it were, our presence in the borough of Queens by the integration of the Samuel H. Wang High School into the Yeshiva University network of high schools, at this wonderful occasion, which I suspect will be historic in the story of Jewish education in this city and indeed in this country, this is an occasion for a special emphasis on the Jewish education of the women, especially on the secondary level, but including as well the tertiary level or the college level. For one thing, the times demand it. Our grandmothers did not get the kind of education that our daughters are getting. They did not get it. Their education came by osmosis. It came to them because they lived, because the Yiddish agas, the Jewish public life, was so saturated with Jewish knowledge and Jewish values and Jewish principles that one had no choice but to absorb it quite unconsciously. From that point of view, they were thoroughly Jewish. Their formal learning was quite flawed and most noticeable by its absence. Today, we have no excuse. No excuse for young women not to be extremely well educated in Torah and in Yahadus, in Judaism. Some 60 or 70 years ago, when the sainted Chofetz Chaim gave his blessing to the Beis Yaakov movement for the teaching of Judaism to Jewish women, one of his arguments was that things are different today. Times have changed. Why? Once upon a time, our daughters were all ignorant of all the literary arts. They spoke only Yiddish, and they couldn't read or write. Now, he said, there's great enlightenment in the Jewish world. And he says, our daughters have learned lilmod ksav ulashon ha'amim. They know how to write, and they can speak the language of the goyim. Well, today, our women are more advanced over the Chofetz Chaim's days than in the Chofetz Chaim's days they were in the previous generations. Our women not only can write and read, depending on where they go to school, depending which language, but not only can they write or read, but they are professors of philosophy, and they are medical doctors, and they are biophysicists, and they are lawyers, and they are judges, and they are accountants, and they are businesswomen. They're in every field. And sometimes the men are somewhat surprised and even dismayed to learn that their brains are not one whit less than the male brain. I just came today with Dr. Miller. I have one of the perks of office that I have is that my graduate schools arrange tutorials for me, which means that, especially the medical school, we've had it the fifth year or the fourth year now, they get four or five of their finest researchers, and for 2 hours or 1.5 hours, they pump us full of the latest information. So I learn about them, they learn about me. I get the best benefit out of it. I learn something. And we have here a member of the medical faculty, a lady who's a member of our board. Must tell you, I sit sometimes in amazement at the intellectual prowess of people who a few generations ago would never have been permitted to do what they do now. It's incredible. The level of research, the level of insight, the intellectual breadth, the scope, the depth. In an age of this sort, we do not have the moral right to deprive any Jewish youngster, any Jewish girl, of acquaintance with the sources of the Jewish tradition firsthand, the primary sources of the Jewish tradition. It must be done, and it must be done with excellence. Their education must be a quality education. And we are determined, Yeshiva University is determined, that given the resources, given your assistance, your support, and your help, the Samuel H. Wang Yeshiva University High School of Queens will not only be a Queens school, it will be the queen of all the Jewish high schools. We are going to try for the best students, the best, and yet we are not going to neglect the non-elite students, because these are the ones who may turn out to be elite later on. And because every Jewish child deserves a Jewish education to the best of his or her ability, we're going to try for the best, the most motivated, the most motivating faculty, both Kodesh and Chol, general and in Jewish studies, under the inspired leadership of our administration, of Rabbi Safran and Mrs. Krauss, and Dr. Geldard and the girls' school, and Rabbi Spiegelman moving into the boys' school together with Rabbi Finkelstein. In this respect, permit me to share with you a number of thoughts relevant to our enterprise, which I gleaned from last Shabbos' Sedra. And there must be a fire someplace, some alarm went off. Did I say something that's terribly alarming? Did I cause that to happen? Oh, maybe I stole a thought from somebody and that's why it happened. Share some thoughts with you from Vayishlach that occurred to me while studying the Sedra, knowing that I had to be here this evening and speak to you about the topic that I am addressing this evening. After all, we are a Torah institution. How is it proper for us to meet without some Divrei Torah? Bear with me. I think the ideas are relevant and they're important. We read of a critical time in the life of that early Jewish family, the family of Jacob and his 12 sons and his daughter. Most of the stories that we read in the Torah concern the sons of Jacob. This one concerns the daughter, and it's an unhappy story. We read about Dinah. Vateitze Dinah bas Lea asher yolda liYaakov liros bivno saaretz. Dinah, young Dinah, the only girl in the family, went out. Dinah, the daughter of Leah, who was born to Jacob. This is the language. Vateitze Dinah bas Lea asher yolda liYaakov. Dinah, the daughter of Leah, who was born to Jacob, her father was Jacob, went out, Vatese, Liros Bevnosaurus, to see the daughters of the land, to get to know the girls of the area. They had just come to this area, she wanted to become acquainted with them. The result of that yitziyah, of that going out, was disastrous. She was espied by a man called Shechem. It follows the story of the dishonoring of Dinah, the forcible taking of Dinah by Shechem, and then the anger of her brothers, who without sharing the information with their father, decide to take revenge. They kill Shechem and his father, the whole community is wiped out. Jacob and his sons then fall into an argument because Jacob maintains that this hawkishness was uncalled for because going to result in more vengeful acts by the others. And what happens is a very unhappy chapter in the life of Jacob and his family. When the rabbis took to analyzing this event, they looked at that verse I've quoted to you, and they, as a result, they looked askance at Dinah herself. They said that they were unhappy with Dinah's promenade, her walk. They were very displeased with it. It is something which led to her humiliation. It compromised the honor of the house of Jacob. It led to the destruction of Shechem and his compatriots. It caused his sons to engage, her brothers to engage in bloodshed. And it threatened war with the neighbors of Jacob and his family. That's their opinion. I have a few questions about that. I'm not happy with it. My questions are as follows. First, the description of Dinah seems awkward. Everyone who read the Torah until this point knows that Dinah is the daughter of Leah and Jacob. Why do we have to be told that Dinah, the daughter of Leah, Asher Yolda LeYaakov, who was born to Jacob? It seems to be too much information, and the Torah is never guilty of an overloaded computer. It never gives us too much information. Every word is counted. What's the meaning of this? Why should we be told this? Second, the rabbis in the Midrash say of Leah, of Dinah, of Leah too, but of Dinah, that Yatzonis Hayisa. She was, how would you describe it? It's hard to put it in proper English. She was a bit bold. She went out too much. She was not as sufficiently a homebody as a person of that breeding and background ought to have been. Vatese, she went out. She had no business, Liros Bivnosaurets, to pal around with the girls, or hang around with the girls of that area. That was not called for. That's what the Midrash says. I ask, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with a young girl moving into a new area, going out to see who else is here, my age, my peers, whom I can get to know? And what's wrong with Vatese? What's wrong with going out? If Atese is so bad, remember to the week before. Do you remember the parasha of the week before? What is it called? Vayese, her father went out. It comes to me, his father going out, Vayese Yaakov, what do we read? He went out, and the Torah tells us he had a dream. He saw angels on a ladder, and the rabbis say he went out because when a great holy man leaves, it makes an impression. When he comes, it makes an impression. Everything is good. Everything is comes up roses with Jacob. Why so harsh on poor Dinah? She did what her father did. He went out, she went out. Why blame her? These are the thoughts that raced through my mind when I read this verse and read the rabbinic commentary. Let me tell you what I think about it, and you can judge its relevance yourselves. I think it's perfectly okay, Liros Bivnosaurus. There's nothing wrong with a young person developing social contacts with new friends. On the contrary, if your daughter or my daughter moved to a new area and stayed home and never walked out, we turn to the nearest psychologist and say, something is wrong, help me. We go for counseling. We're worried that she's too shy, she's too withdrawn, she's introverted, she's not open enough. What's wrong with Liros Bivnosaurus? She's perfectly good. Moreover, I see in this a metaphor. The Bivnosaurus does not mean the daughters of the land, does not only mean the girls who were there. It also means the cultural properties of a land. She wanted to see these newfangled ideas, these newfangled systems that were prevalent in this new country. And when a young person goes out, there's nothing wrong, Leodos Pivnosardes, to do business with people, and metaphorically to learn new culture, to become acquainted with new art, to delve into new areas of scholarship. It's all appropriate and it's all proper. I would affirm that wholeheartedly. But there's no doubt in my mind that as with Dina, Vateitze can lead to znus, can lead to moral disaster, and not only moral disaster, but religiously, culturally, intellectually, and spiritually. It can lead to a debasing of one's whole worldview. It can, unless that young person knows first and foremost that she is Asher Yolda Liyakov. If she knows where she comes from, if she knows where from she springs, if she knows the heritage of the house of Jacob, if she is aware of who her grandfather and great-grandfather were, that this is Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, if she knows that, there's nothing wrong with Leodos Pivnosardes, with getting a wider and broader education. On the contrary, it means supplementing what she has. It means filling out all the niches of one's mind. But without Asher Yolda Liyakov, then Leodos Pivnosardes is another word for assimilation and for losing the greatness, the holiness, the spirit, the heritage that has made us a singular people and kept us alive for well over 3,500 years. A young Jewish woman as well as a young Jewish man must know Asher Yolda Liyakov. I am a Jewish woman, I am a Jewish man, I am Ben Yaakov or Bas Yaakov. I know who I am. I know who I am because I am aware of Judaism's primary sources. My pride is not an empty arrogance. It's not an ethnic arrogance or superciliousness. Rather, it comes from awareness and knowledge and study and conviction. I love it, and I want to delve into it for the rest of my life. You don't have to be a professor of Jewish studies to read the Parshas HaShavua or to read Rashi for the week. If you forget Asher Yolda Liyakov, then Vateitze Leodos Pivnosardes is a cataclysm. It's a catastrophe. If you know it, it's a blessing. Then you can mingle and learn with confidence, with safety, and with impunity. And this, my friends, is what Yeshiva University's education is all about. It's Torah and it's Mada. It means first and foremost to fulfill one's complete identity as a Jew and as a Jewess. Asher Yolda Liyakov, to know who you are, what makes you different, what makes you special, what challenge do you have in front of you? And second, Leodos Pivnosardes. Then to be able to embrace the world because you have a criterion of selection. You have values by which to judge the rest of the world. What's right and what's wrong. What's ethical and what's unethical. What's honorable and what's dishonorable. What is enduring and what is ephemeral. You can't make these judgments unless you have a standard. And that standard is your Jewishness and your Jewish learning. I have one additional comment. And that is an answer to my other question. If they were so harsh at Dina because Vateitze, why were they so complimentary to Yaakov for his going out, for his Vayetze? I believe the answer is this. The rabbis were critical of Dina because she just didn't go out. She sauntered. She sort of casually walked about. There is a kind of aimlessness about Dina's walking. No one sent her. She had no plan. She just went out to look. And when you just go out to look, and you bring with you no plan, no sense of something higher in life, it can get you into trouble. With Jacob, there's quite a different story. Jacob, unlike Dina, later on, was not undirected. When he went, it's because his parents sent him on a mission. He knew that he was going someplace. And he was going to find a wife. He was not just going to find a wife because you had to get married sometimes. because Jacob had a sense of historical destiny. Jacob knew that there was a promise given to his grandfather Abraham, the Birchas Avram, meant that he was a third in line of a family, a line that was going to take the Holy Land and build there a model society for all the world. He knew that he had a mission in life, a purpose in life. His Vayetze was a directed Vayetze. And therefore, when Vayetze Yaakov, that's a tzaddik baller ear, then it's meaningful. When Dina went, she had forgotten Asher Yolda LeYaakov. Her going was meandering. It wasn't meaningful. The difference is in the word shlichus. Shlichus, a mission. Jacob felt it was a transcendent mission which he was performing. Dina was ignorant of such a higher mission. My friends, what we seek to develop in our students, we don't always succeed, but then again, I don't know of any human institution which is perfect. Even we are not perfect. We're as close as you can get to it, but we're not perfect. We can always be better. What we do seek to develop, in addition to the learning of Torah, to the learning of the general culture of the world fully, in addition to being acquainted with all that the great world around us has to offer, culturally, intellectually, socially, artistically, in addition to all this, there's something internal. What we've talked about now is knowledge, and that's not enough. There's got to be a sense of shlichus. A Jew must know why he was placed in the world. One of the greatest existential problems that all of us face in the modern age is our sense of being unrooted. We're unanchored. We have a sense of meandering, of atesei dina. Life seems to be so aimless. We live our lives and suddenly we're no longer children, we're adolescents. And before you look around, we're adults. Young adults. And as much as an eye wink, and suddenly you're in the middle of your career, before you realize that you're thinking about retirement, and then you end up, you're part of the senior citizens group. And what have you accomplished all along? You think back to your, and I'm talking about our honest moments, not our defensive moments, when we speak to no one but ourselves. And we get the feeling, well, what does my life have added up to? What have I really accomplished? What have I done? I've gotten certain things, I've given certain things, but is it integrated? Is there a purpose to it? Is there a plan? Is there a sense of having had a message, a mission assigned that I've begun to accomplish? It's part of our real existential problem. What we have to do with our students is give them a sense of shlichus, that each boy and each girl, each man and each woman has a purpose. And the purpose is taught by Torah. It's not a purpose we can give them black and white. It's a purpose we can encourage them to discover for themselves, from within the sources of the Jewish tradition. A purpose of Ahavas Hashem and Ahavas HaTorah and Ahavas Yisrael. A purpose of Ahavas HaBrios, of loving God and loving Israel, loving Torah and loving mankind, and doing something about it. Of making some kind of contribution, no matter how small, to the progress of our people, to the advancement of learning of Torah, to the advancement of humankind as such. This means that we do something. We want our youngsters not only to know Torah, we want them to live Torah. We want Torah to be something that will make their lives more purposeful, more meaningful. We want to teach them the principle of service. I was very proud. Several people mentioned, Mr. Miller mentioned it earlier, about the rally in Washington Sunday, yesterday. I was very proud of our students. We didn't insist that anyone go. We didn't give school any promise of makeups for a school. We had 8 buses for our young men and women who went. How many young people came from our high school? Someone told me, Rabbi Hertz, is it? 5 buses, and 5 buses from the high school. Not only that, along with all these buses went 4 of our Rashi Yeshiva, who gave Sheorim going and coming to the other groups. And the Sheorim were on the principle of Pidyon Shvuyim, the mitzvah, the commandment to redeem the captives, which is what the whole story of Russian Jewry is all about, the whole enterprise. Now, this was an example of young people who learn what Shlichus is, and they learn it not separate from their Torah. This is part of their Torah learning. Such young people gain something that I think is very difficult to find elsewhere. The Shlichus is a powerful motivation for learning. It means the integration of learning with moral and character development. It means the awareness of a higher transcendent purpose, a higher calling, and therefore that which imbues our charges, our children, with an inner confidence and strength that comes from knowing that life is indeed meaningful. It's not just a stretch of wakefulness between two infinitely long nights, but something more than that. And they know that if, how did the rabbi say it, Emeinam malachim b'nei malachim hema, if they are not kings, they are the sons of kings, that they have a hoary tradition that they are called upon to renew in their generation as their children will be called upon to renew in their generation in turn. And it is to these noble ends, that we venture into this borough of Queens. I was going to say, if they're not queens, at least they're princesses, but I won't say that. That we venture into this borough of this great Jewish community. There are not many cities in the world that have as many Jews as this one borough. There are not many cities in the world that have as many shuls as this one borough. We venture here in the confidence that the jury of Queens will rise to the challenge of continuing to support this high school as it has risen to the challenge of establishing it. It did something great when it built such a very fine school. It must now do something greater by making of it even a greater school. A greater school, a more attractive school, a more lovely school. We at Yeshiva have embraced this school. It is now ours. It is also yours, because we are one family. Together, we hope to give our children these messages of Torah and learning, of a sense of moderation and openness to the world, of an openness to culture and science and literature, and above all, to filling out the moral dimensions of their lives, so that each and every student who leaves the school, will do so with a knowledge of that special shlichut, that special mission that will endow them with meaning, with grace, and with dignity.
For concluding remarks and to express our thanks to Dr. Lamb for his lecture, it is my pleasure to call upon Mr. Joseph Rubin, past president of the Samuel H. Wang High School, a newly elected member of the board of the YU High School, who has been appointed to serve as co-chairman of development. Mr. Rubin.
Thank you, Dr. Lamb, for those inspiring words, and I'm sure we'll follow up on them. On behalf of all of us here tonight, I want to express our sincere thanks for your illuminating address. Your words and wisdom have inspired all of us to better appreciate the noble and vital cause of higher Jewish education, which is the hallmark of Yeshiva University. Speaking for myself, and I am certain for those in this audience tonight, I pledge my full support of the entire Jewish community to join with us to provide the material support through active participation and the utmost of generosity to enable you, Dr. Lamb, and your administration to fulfill the important educational goals which are on your agenda for excellence. In so doing, we shall not only be your vital partners in this educational challenge, but we shall merit the direct benefit to our own families and to our own community, which will be better prepared to maximize the opportunities for the enrichment of our Torah heritage and the academic excellence of our Yeshiva University schools. We are deeply honored by your visit to our community, and especially by your significant message, which has gladdened our hearts. Thank you, everybody.